The Nearbound podcast is sponsored by MindMatrix, the industry's leading partner ecosystem orchestration platform. MindMatrix centralizes the enablement of internal and external revenue teams to support all partner operations. Alliances to influencers and everything in between, MindMatrix has you covered as a next-gen PRM. Check out MindMatrix. They're designed to meet all the current and future partnership needs to orchestrate your Nearbound strategies. Thank you to MindMatrix.
We're back at last. Welcome to the Nearbound podcast. Boy, do I love saying that now more than ever, especially after last week, Isaac. Isaac, what did we wrap up last week?
Well, you just told me that I screwed up. I did a little recording of a podcast intro, and apparently I said it wrong. What did I say?
You said, I mean, I'm being pedantic here. I am being very, very petty.
I thought I was on it. I was so excited to finally get to say it one
you
time.
You said back again at last, and there was too much consonation there.
I made up that word too, by the way.
It's alliteration, but
unbelievable. We just finished up the Nearbound Summit and, absolutely amazing time. Just like ridiculously high quality sessions. I'm truly blown away. I can't think of any session that I attended that wasn't just like fire, and, being there during these sessions, I kept being like, man, we really got good stuff here. We got the best. We got the best of the best. And actually, one of those is the impetus for today's podcast episode. Both you and I, during this session, were like, oh my, we need to bring on a podcast guest from this session, Rashida Calhoun, on this session about co-selling, was just on fire every time she got on the mic. And we knew we need to get her on the podcast. So here she is.
Yeah. Pass Rashida the mic. Let's go. Rashida, welcome to the Nearbound podcast. So great to have you.
Thank you. Pass me the mic. I need an official mic like you guys. I got to up my game.
We're going to have to send you the complimentary golden mic after that performance. I mean, you threw it down. That was, so for folks of you that missed it, go check it out. It's on sales day. It's still up at nearboundsummit.com. And if not, that'll get redirected to, you'll have a button to go to the recordings on nearbound.com. And, Rashida was on sales day and was on the firepower four woman, co-sell panel that was like, I was told it was going to be one of the best. It did not disappoint. It was awesome. And you were just popping off. And I was like, we have to talk after this. And we were talking in the pre-show, Rashida, and I feel like there's a pretty easy way to kick this off that's probably going to be pretty controversial to some folks listening today. So earmuffs, if you're scared, relationships over revenue. You like to say revenue over relationships. Tell me more.
100%. Listen, what we're after in partnerships is revenue, right? I think we lead with relationships. We do a lot of this. You know, we're going to build relationship with our partners and we're going to make friends. I know their kids play soccer and tennis and all that. And that's great. But knowing all of those things doesn't actually win in partnerships. Knowing all of those things doesn't let you go back to your executive team and show them that you are moving the needle with your partners. Ultimately, it comes down to revenue. I have tons of friends. I'm friends with my high school friends, my college friends, my kids, moms, those are my friends, right? I'm friend out. And so no, I don't come into the partnership space to make friends. Relationships, it's not my thing. Revenue is my thing.
Whenever you said, that's great, I literally tried not to laugh because the way you said it was just like the Southern version of like, you know, Isaac, what do they say? You know, like sweetheart or whatever.
Bless your soul.
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. So I grew up in Atlanta. I'm very much a Southern belle, right? And I think a lot of that comes across.
You're like, that's so great. It was like, oh.
Right. Honest with each other, right? Right. We're chasing a check, and maybe not in the same way that our counterparts in sales, right? We're not going direct, but at the end of the day, if our partnerships aren't driving revenue, then we're failing.
That's why it was so exciting and like invigorating when you know you were chatting on that panel. I'm thinking from a standpoint of if you're a CEO, if you're a CRO, if you're, you know, anyone who's focused on revenue in a company, the typical partner person is going to say, it's about relationships, relationships over revenue. I'm not trying to throw Sam and Jason Yarbrough under the bus because I know they had a
podcast. We love you, episode. Sam.
They had one title.
Yeah, Sam was awesome too on that panel. Like you both
relationships over revenue. And I remember seeing that title and being like, ugh, because this is what's different about your work than your church, your baseball league, your family, it is about revenue. It has to be about revenue. It doesn't mean you can't also have relationships, but the realness, and it's like, once you get that out of the way, then you clear away all the bullshit. And now you actually can become friends and have relationships. But if you've said up front, like if I'm a leader and I hear a partner person say, it's all about building relationships, it's all about giving, it's all about, okay, that all sounds nice, but now I got to do all the work of being like, okay, and then that leads to revenue. How? But if you come in and say, look, it's all about revenue. That's all that matters. I don't, everything else is secondary. Now I'm like, oh, thank goodness. I'm talking to the right person. Then yeah. When you tell me there's a reason that I want to invest in building these relationships or building, I know that you're doing it with a purpose because you must see a path to revenue because that's what you opened with. That's what you started with. And just that reorientation, it sounds so obvious, but it really isn't, especially coming out of a zero interest rate environment where there's money sloshing around and people aren't, you know, like, I think people still haven't adjusted to the realities, you know?
Exactly. And I think it's hard for us to sort of think about, I feel like you're using your partners, right? But we are, right? Like, come on. Like, I mean, not using them in a negative way, right? But I think if we can all just be honest and say, yes, this is about revenue. Relationship sort of is something that comes along with it, right? It's a nice to have, the cherry on top. I don't want to eat cherries every day, but I do want money every day, right? It allows me to then go to my partners and then have a very honest conversation with them too, right? I'm not sitting them down and being like, I don't care about you. I don't want to be your friend. I just want to make a lot of money with you. But I am able to say with conviction, can we see money from this partnership, right? I'm looking to get maybe these results, right? I want to get $250,000 out of this partnership. Is that something that you think we can do? How can we get there? Because maybe they say yes, and then we'll become best friends. Or maybe they say no, and we'll say, let's agree to just not date, right? Like, I'm too old to like just be dating people for the fun of it, right? Come on.
It's funny that you almost, it's easy to think that investing in relationships or let's say only focusing on revenue or being obsessed with revenue is a way of like undervaluing the relationship or undervaluing yourself. But I almost feel like it's the other way around, that if you are not immediately focused on how can we drive revenue, it kind of shows like a lack of valuing of your own time. Here's what I mean. Like, Jared and I have both worked in early stage startups. You get an investor, they invest in you. And when they invest in you, they don't tell you, I'm doing this because I want to cut you a check for $1 million because I want to build a relationship. And I hope that we can have a really good relationship. And maybe we'll make some money, but I want a relationship. No, they're like, the only reason I'm doing this is because I think there's a chance that you could 100x my money. So what would need to be true to get that 100x or that 10x, whatever it is, what would need to be true to get that return? And that's what all your calls are focused on. That's what your whole relationship with folk is focused on. What would we need to do to get there? And maybe we will, maybe we won't. But the reason they're so focused on that is because they have invested a lot of resources. And I think as partner people, it's easy to undervalue your time and see your time as like a VC cutting a check. If you're going to partner up with someone, if you're going to get on calls with them and meetings, you're going to come up with things you can do together, that time is worth money. And so you should always come to those meetings. Like, for us to have it be worth the amount of time we're putting in, this needs to be the outcome. What needs to be true to get to that outcome? And let's figure out if it's going to happen or not before we go, you know, go to invest more in the next round. So anyway, I think there's this paradox where it's like, you feel like you're being mean, but actually what you're doing is undervaluing yourself. And that's like, worse in the long run.
100%, right? Like, let's honor ourselves and honor our partners, right? And like, when you think about the day-to-day of a partner manager and the bi-weekly calls that they have with all of their partners, you could spend a lot of time just getting to know the person on the other end of the phone. But knowing you better does not immediately equate to a successful partnership, So let's not do that. I'm going to get to know you along the way. I'm going to get to know that your kids play soccer, and that's cool. And maybe one day I'll come out to a game. But that sort of needs to come parallel to the conversations of how do our businesses make sense together, right? Let me share my business goals with you. Like, I sat down with a partner today and I was like, listen, it's Q4 and I need to close a deal. Now, the relationship that I have with this partner, and you guys probably see already, I'm very transparent. So that's just who I am. Everyone probably can approach a conversation that way. But I can say, I need to close a deal in Q4. So what can you throw me so that I can do that, so that this partnership can continue to flourish in 2024, right? If you can't have those conversations, then there's really no purpose in the relationship, because we're just talking about like cookies and kumbaya.
We ain't having no cookies at the Rashida party today, folks.
Do you hear me? We want money at the Rashida party.
I absolutely love it. I'm going to put a couple things together that I heard from last week around this conversation that I think is so fun and true. What you just said is like, okay, it's real, it's simple, but it's foundational, it's true. It's revenue over relationships. You know, my best relationships are people I make money with all the time. I mean, that's the only reason I'd ever hang out with Isaac, or Isaac would ever hang out with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Jared,
let's make more money together.
Listen, you have to help me make more money, because otherwise it's
you'd never be my friend, Isaac. Never at all. there is something very real about this. And I love how you said, you know, honor yourself and honor your partner. Like, at the end of the day, you know, that's the thing that must be true. It's not love. You know, in a marriage, in a relationship, it's love, right? That's the thing that must be true. In a partnership, it's revenue, right? You know, you don't get married or sign the partner agreement absent that baseline, that fundamental thing that's between us all. And what's funny is, you know, you said, hey, I want you to be able to honor yourself and your partner and be able to ask for that source thing. I loved how, like, it was a session with Aaron McGarry and Corey Bray. So it was on when partner attach goes wrong and how to coach your way out of it. And what Aaron was talking about, he's like, look, you need to have the relationship that sourcing deals are the partners that I send deals to. It's that simple, right? It's that simple. Like, if we do not have this reciprocity, which is honest, like, if you are not sending me deals, I am not sending you deals, period. We're going to prioritize and over prioritize sending deals to our partners that source, period.
Yeah, and that's right.
Wow. Simple enough. Okay, cool. We've level set with that up front. That tends to make a wild difference. And then something that Jill Rowley said, you know, she said, I work for the customer. The customer is the boss. Here's the reality, partner people. If the customer is the ultimate boss, if that's who pays your CEO's check, right? That's who pays for your, you know, board salary, your executive salary, pays for everyone's salary, presumably in an economy where you have to be default alive. Well, if the customer is the ultimate boss, and your partnerships aren't driving revenue, who are you working for?
Yeah.
Right? Because customers have to pay you to be a customer. Like, let's just keep that in mind. Customers don't work for free. They don't come to us and use our services for free. And we don't work for free. So at the end of the day, if your partnerships aren't about driving customer value that drives revenue, right? What are you doing? What are you doing on this planet?
What are you doing on this planet? Right. And it isn't to say that relationships don't matter, right? Obviously, I have to have a good enough relationship to be able to go to my partner and say, can you toss me a deal for Q4, right? But it is to say that let's get our priorities in order, right? Revenue is first. I remember having a conversation at one of the companies I worked for in the past, and I was sort of making this claim that we needed partner managers. And our chief revenue officer was like, we don't need any more relationship people. And I'm like, good, because I don't want relationship people. I'm looking for revenue people, and partner people are not relationship people. And I want to dispel that myth, right? Because that creates challenges for us when we do need to go and get resources, right? When we are saying, hey, I need more people, or I need more things to continue to build out my partner program. Because we always lead with relationships. Folks are like, well, it's not tied to revenue. And so you're not a priority. No, you need to prioritize me the same way that you prioritize sales. Why? Because the leads that I bring in convert faster. They convert bigger. They are better. And I should be carrying about 40% of your revenue. So yeah, give me these resources. I'm a revenue person, right? I need money to make more money.
You'll get to value, whether that's a yes or a no, so much faster
so much.
When you come to the point like that, like, I mean, you get on, you know, with a new partner or potential partner and framing the conversation like, well, let's just get to know each other and ask a bunch of questions. What are you trying to do? Versus, hey, is there a way that we can drive 250K in revenue together this quarter?
Yeah.
And if you start there, then it's like, oh, well, you could probably figure out pretty quickly whether that's doable or not. And if the answer is no, it could just be, okay, well, let's back burner this and let's come back to it when it is, whatever it is that it is that you need to hit. And that's like so much more respectful, and it actually levels up the people around you. I know I've been on calls where I come on the call and business calls typically are very fluffy at first and whatever. When you get on a call with someone who immediately is like, all right, here's what I want to know. Can we do this together? Boom, 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 boom. It like forces me to level up, and I get off that call being like, okay, maybe it doesn't make sense now, but I want to work with that person in the future because they mean business. And it's like, it, given where we are in the market, show me you know me, show me you care is completely true. But what shows you care more than showing that you care about helping someone drive revenue? Because they're going to lose their job if they can't. So like, I like you as a person. I'm going to show you how much I know you as a person. That doesn't matter to me if you're not helping me do the one thing I really care about right now, which is keep my job and keep winning. And so if you show up to that call, like, here's what I need. I need to drive this. What do you need to drive? Can we drive it together? Yes or no? If yes, what do we need to do to make it happen? Just that frame it. Again, it sounds simple, but it's, I think it requires a little bit of a ruthlessness with your time. And Rashida, I know having four kids, because I have four kids as well, it's like a secret advantage because you have to be ruthless with your time, you know?
Yeah, you have you absolutely have to. There are 24 hours in a day. I have four kids, a husband, and a freaking crazy mini golden doodle, right? Plus my job, plus my friends, plus my, you know, like, so I can't function if I'm not efficient. So I don't have time. I always joke that I don't like small talk. And I will small talk because you kind of have to, especially now post-COVID, right? But I just want to get to the point of why I'm here. And I do that because I don't have a lot of time to waste. There are a million other things on my list, right? I work for a startup, right? So I'm doing like 10 jobs. So no, I don't want to waste my time. I don't want to waste your time. And let's get to a yes or a no as fast as we possibly can. And four kids, by the way, is absolutely nuts. Like, can we just say that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm like 50% loading, you know, to where both of you are. And I've always thought of Isaac and Heather and the family as role models, because I'm like, how y'all do it with four kids is just, you know, I'm like reading from the instruction manual of like his kids' posts and dad jokes. I'm like, no, actually, there's something here. You got to pay attention to this man or woman or anyone that's like leading or, you know, running a charge with that amount of kids and time. I absolutely love it.
There's a component, Rashida, that you mentioned during the session that we didn't really get into much. You talked about the grassroots aspect of partnerships. What do you mean by that? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, grassroots is my claim to fame. I think like old school partnership is you get a partner manager or a counterpart on the other side. You get executive buy-in, right? Your schmooze, all that stuff is really fun. I love it. I've had some really good like wine and dinners, all because of working in partnerships, right? Great. But today, that doesn't work anymore. Just getting buy-in at the executive level, at the sort of highest levels doesn't work. And so you have to sort of take more of a top-down, bottom-up strategy, right? So still doing that top-down, still getting executive buy-in, still getting a yes at that level, but then you really have to go deeper. You have to get to the ground. And I remember when I was managing a team of partner managers and I started to deploy this strategy, and I'm like, we're going to start picking up the phone. We're going to start sending emails on LinkedIn. And I got accused of turning them into SDRs. And that's fine because you guys are the highest paid SDRs that I know, because partner folks are paid really well. I think we know that. But that is something that worked. We watched our leads from partners, our referral leads, increase by 30% just by simply going to reps, finding a rep and saying, hey, we have this partnership in place. And if we do X, Y, Z, I can help you go to President's Club. I can help you hit your quarterly goal. I can help you do these things. Do you want to learn how? Right. And you got to do that a few times to convince someone. And yes, it does kind of feel like SDRs, but what SDRs do, it works, right? So we put that strategy to work. And the idea is you get one, you hook one, and you go to town with them and you win, right? And we now have technology in place that we can use to sort of get to that a little bit faster and identify those, right? Like when you look at overlapping tools. But you get one win. And then you parade the hell out of that win, right? You show that win to everyone on your side. You show that win to everyone on the partner side. And then you make your next ask. And your next ask is to that rep that you won with. Introduce me to one of your friends at work. Introduce me to someone on your team, right? When you get enough of those, then the next introduction that you can ask for is to a DM or to an RVP. And now I want to come and talk about this one on your team meeting, on your regional meeting, right? And it goes beyond just a simple high-level executive conversation, big presentations at the like national sales meetings. Those are great, but they don't actually win deals. We got to get to the ground level. And I'd love to do that with grassroots.
I love the phrase grassroots so much. One of the first companies I ever created, Rashida, was a company called igrassroots.com. So I actually built campaign websites to like do online fundraising for political movements, grassroots movements, right? And what we'd do is we would do direct mail to a certain region to try and affect, you know, a local election of X, Y, or Z, right? So like it had to be about grassroots, especially when it was coordinated from, let's say, outside, right? So like if I'm living in Washington, D.C. and I'm trying to affect a race in North Carolina, how could I possibly do that if I don't live and vote there? You know, like how could I possibly go win inside of this account and get this customer to be, you know, the boss and pay our bills if I'm not inside that account? I don't work there, right? I don't live there. I'm not in the place that the person that I'm selling to is, nor am I a party on the path to their promised land. You know, I'm just a rep, a vendor, a partner person, or whatever.
That's right.
And I think what you're talking about by building grassroots movements is like, you need to go travel on site, so to speak. So I had to spend time in North Carolina and I had to build out, you know, the beginnings of like a grassroots movement, which is like key champions and people and move across the chain and relationships. And what I come to find out is I ended up surrounding that district. It's kind of funny, right? You get all of these people around and to the side, but it has to start with that first win, that belief that, you know, hey, we did this get out the vote effort, you know, in X, Y, or Z area. Look at the results from the door knocking or the cold calls or the direct mail solicitation or whatever those things were. Look what's happening, right? We're going to be the winning party. We could show some results and then I could get that next, you know, district or that next thing, you know, on board. It had to be that way. It couldn't be top down. No one would have given us the money to even, you know, fundraise on to then go deploy. And
you got to do the work. Right. Yeah, you got to do the work. Take the bull by the horns, right? And just get out there. Get onto the ground level. Because the truth is, at the top level, the best you're going to be able to do is sales enablement. You're going to run a webinar and you're going to talk to them about pain points. And here's what you should look for and listen for. Right. But they're on to the next thing. Right. And there are other partners that you're competing with and for their time. Get in front of them, do the work with them, show them that you're willing to sort of be in it with them. Show them that you can help them win. Because again, it's all about the money. Right. Especially for a sales rep. And so if you can get down there with them and get some wins and then you parade those wins, you get more wins. A win makes a win every time.
Yeah. And I think the one of the keys I'm picking up here, I know, Jared, I've heard you talk about this before too, is as the partner person taking the initiative instead of waiting for the salesperson. So like if you go and tell salespeople, hey, FYI, we have all these partners that can help you. Be sure to let us know, right? That's kind of like the old joke when a venture capitalist says, let me know how I can be helpful. Well, it's really vague in general. And so when you're in the moment, you don't think of them, right? You're in the moment, you're working on a deal versus if that partner manager is following along and they're like, oh, I see this deal just moved to this stage. I know someone at this deal. I'm going to come to you and say, hey, guess what? I see this deal move to this stage. I got this person over here I can connect you with. Now it's specific, right? We talk a lot, Jared, about, you know, being actually helpful instead of just generically offering. Like if somebody that you know went through a hard time saying, let me know if I can help, not helpful. Saying, hey, I brought you a meal. I'm bringing you a meal right now. Yeah. I'm on my way over. Super helpful because you've taken the cognitive load off of them. So telling sales reps, I'm here, just let me know if you need me, is not very helpful. Saying, I can see what you're doing right now this week, and I can help you in this specific way with this specific account and this partner. Like that makes such a huge difference.
And it's actionable, right? I can move on it right now. It's like, oh, you got help for me? Help me. Like make it easy for me. Let's do it.
What's so this is something that came up in that co-sell panel that I was meaning to ask because I've heard different approaches to this. When you're going to look for that first win, you're going to try to find a rep where you can help them, you know, get a deal done with partner help. I would think the strategy would be start with the lowest hanging fruit. Find the rep that's the most open to it already and easiest to work with. But I have heard people say the opposite. Find the most skeptical rep who's the most opposed to this idea. And if you help them close a deal with partners, then you win over everybody. I'm curious if you have a philosophy on that.
I could see that. I could see. So I'm going after the lowest hanging fruit. I want a quick win. I need my quickest win. I don't want to convince the skeptic. Just be skeptical and kind of do your own thing.
Yep.
I have convinced skeptics, right? But after being able, like, myself with enough wins, right? And then being able to go with them and say, I got this for you. And here's my track record. But that's just me. I don't want to argue with you. I don't want to try and convince you. I want someone who's already bought in. Another way that I think a lot of folks miss is find the rep who's trying to make a name for themselves.
Mm.
The new rep, right? Or the rep who is like not a top rep. Now that is an absolute winner because they need something, right? And they will latch on to just about anything. A win for them means so much more. And then they'll be so bought in to you as a partner, like in their mind, they're going to think I can't win without this person. And they're going to bring you along every single time. That's my favorite.
That's a killer, killer insight. It's so in line too with just the who and the when are so important. Like, yeah, I mean, even when identifying which partners to work with, it's similar.
Yeah.
I, you know, Jared, you talked about this a lot and it's in the sales blueprint. Like find the partner who just recently closed this deal, not the one who closed them 2 years ago, because it's going to be more relevant. The information is going to be more relevant. Finding that rep who, where they are in their journey and what they want is very much relevant to this. I love that. I absolutely love
that. Yeah. Like, especially like if you I work with a lot of agencies, right? And so they have tons of consultants that are in the market. There's always going to be a few consultants who maybe they're junior and they want to move up. They need to make a name. No one knows who they are at the agency, right? If you can help them win.
So I got to ask you, I know Jared is going to get mad at me because he hates, he never wants this podcast to be like biography, like tell me your career journey. I actually love that kind of interview, but I have to know how you got into partnerships and like, were you in sales before or something? I really must know.
That's a really good question. So I sort of fell into partnership. I was working for this SEO company that startup over a decade ago. And I was like an editor. I have two degrees in English and I was just like editing SEO content when you used to be able to game Google. Back in the day. And for one of our bigger clients, they were an education client, an ed tech, and we were running out of content. And in the same building was McGraw-Hill. And I was like, oh, they make books. Maybe we can find content from their textbooks. And like fell into, oh, we're going to do this content partnership where you're going to help us with our client. And they kind of fell in love with me because how could you not? And
I love
you got that sales DNA for sure, though. I mean, I see it. I see it. I love it.
And they were building out what they called an enterprise team, but really it was partnerships where they were trying to figure out how can we make sure we get paid on our content every time it's touched, right? And so they built out this team and I was brought on. I think my title was like strategy consultant, but I came up with our strategy to partner with ebook platforms and universities to sort of do a kind of a top down where you adopt our technology at the university level instead of students going in and just kind of buying it one by one. What's really cool about that is today, lots of universities still use it. It's called Inclusive Access now. We called it a bunch of different things back in the day, but it's called Inclusive Access. So if anyone has kids that are going to college and you see on your bill, the books already included, that's partially because of me and a bunch of other people that I used to work with. But so I did that. It worked in the ed tech space, kind of figured out partnership there, fell in love with it, spent half of my career doing partnership work in ed tech, and then shifted to HR tech, spent some time at Paylocity working on that partner team. And then now my newest role, I'm like 2 months in at a company called Axios HQ, which is a startup that focuses on internal communication. And so I am building our partner program from scratch.
That ed tech background is interesting. I have some ed tech background as well. And I know I did not, and I think this is a mistake, lean super heavily into partnerships, particularly with universities. It was more like it was kind of helping people early career, like coming out of college, get that first job. And the reason was I'm not a patient person, and trying to partner with universities at the institutional level, the time and the complexity. So that's really interesting to me, given how you're like, hey, I don't want to waste my time. I'm all about revenue. Your ability to navigate that, like I can see that's kind of like the perfect combo. If you have the patience to be able to navigate partnering with universities and you have that drive to get results, you're kind of in that really like great, you know, great nexus of skills needed for a partner person.
And that's probably like where all of that was born out of. I mean, in addition to the fact that I just lacked patience. But it's like, oh my God, like this could take forever. It's like trying to turn a submarine, but I have this goal that I need to, I want my bonus. I have four kids. I mean, I didn't have four kids then, but you know.
So. I want the fourth kid. Right? I mean, you know, it's funny because I've come to all of these realizations learning out loud with y'all on the podcast and everyone listening and in market with you, Rashida. Thanks so much for doing the summit and, you know, helping. And a lot of these things that you've been talking about, I feel like that's just me. Like I resonates at my core so much. Like I feel like I'm a bloodhound when I'm on an account because I'm searching for money. Like I can find ways. Isaac's very aware of this. I can find ways to make money where no one else can. Right. Like you know that if you are going to partner with me, we're going to figure out a way to make money. And see, that reputation precedes you. Right. So what I'm starting to see is second and third generation partner people, that their reputation precedes them. And it's not a good one. It's not a good one, folks. If you're on your third partnerships role in a role and we know that you got let go three times, like we kind of know it's like, yeah, that was a riff. And I know you probably didn't deserve it. Right. I'm not saying anyone deserves to be fired. But what I am saying is, where are the results? Your reputation precedes you. Your network is your net worth. Well, it doesn't matter if you have 50,000 connections and 48,000 of those people don't trust you, right? And I love how you, like, just your authenticity, you're coming off the top, you're confident. That speaks much more volumes that you're like, hey, I know, you know, we're either going to find a path to make money together real quick or we're not. But at least I know there's not going to be bullshit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, like that's a refreshing take. It really is. It spoke really, you know, to my heart throughout this. And you're one of two guests out of 140 that I've quoted and posted about on LinkedIn Live. I was like, it was so good. I'm like, I got to get this out right now. You've just been dropping bombs left and right.
Well, that makes me happy. I mean, I think, you know, here's what it comes down to. Many people might not say that I'm nice. And there was this one head of sales that said this. I won't say who he is because he and I didn't really get along very well. But he made this comment. He was like, you know, I got on a call with one of your partner manager's partners and they told me that she was nice. And I was like, all right, great. And he was like, do you want that on your headstone? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not dying, right? But he said something that stuck with me. He was like, I don't want to be remembered for being nice, right? I want to be remembered for being good. I want to be remembered for getting the job done, right? And it stuck with me. I hate this guy, right? But that has never left my brain. And people will probably never say that I'm nice. They will say that I'm fun because I love to have fun. I think you guys can probably see that. But they will also say that I always get results. I'm always putting up numbers, right? I'm going to work my butt off. We're going to have a good time doing it, but we're going to make money.
This is the stage, like early career, everybody wants to be liked, and that's normal. And it's kind of okay at first. It's better to err on that side when you're like early, but that leveling up, and I tell this to people all the time, happens when, cause I went through it myself. When you realize there's going to be times where I have a choice. I can either be liked or respected. Yeah. And being liked will get you fans, but it won't get you customers, and it won't get you loyal employees, and it won't get you managers who want to keep you around. Being respected will. And sometimes being liked comes with it, but not always. So when it comes to that choice, you have to choose which one are you going to go for, being respected or being liked. And I've literally seen careers liked to death. Like people get
it's
liked
such a
right
parent thing to say, right? I know you have.
Is Will Taylor listening, Isaac?
Oh, there's it's not a play. No, we love you, Will. We truly do. Well, so, I didn't mean to interrupt there. I was the total joke moment. But Rashida, I was texting to Isaac. You know, are you a character in the game or are you a player of the game? And I want you to ask yourself that question right now if you're listening to this. Are you a character or are you playing it? Guess what? Characters get left in levels, right? You don't carry characters from level to level. The characters that you encountered in version one of the game or level one of the game, those were the easy characters, right? The ones that were likable, you bop them on the head, boom. You're on level 70. All of a sudden, those characters, they got like 14 arms and like, you know, crazy laser eyes. Like, you got to get better to be a player at different levels. But as a character, you can always stay exactly the same. And everyone's going to keep going right by you. And the way that you're talking about is that you're playing the game, right? It's about not just, hey, here's the scenery of my role, my job, my partner. You know, it is what it is. It's no, how do I get to the next level? You know, and those are the people that I've always had the most fun with, that I've enjoyed working with. Are you a character in the game or are you playing the game? I don't see a controller in your hands. You seem like you're a victim of your scenery, of your circumstances, of the level that you were written into. But me over here, I'm playing it. And I feel like you're playing it too.
Absolutely. And, you know, in this, have made some of my best friends in partnerships, right? And it is because we're very honest with each other. We're transparent. We keep it real. We respect the no if it's a no, right? And when it's a yes, we go as hard as we possibly can, right? So in no way am I saying be like this ruthless, shallow, money-chasing person. What I am saying is let's just keep our goals top of mind and let's let the goals drive us and we will build relationships along the way. And that's how we all win, right? And again, it just goes back to that honor. I'm honoring myself, honoring my partners, honoring the 24 hours that I have in the day. And I want to spend much of that as much as I can with my four kids and my family. And so we can get to that much more easily if we just are straight up with each other.
Honor yourself, honor your partner, as you said, right?
Yeah. I would love to hear your take because I've played around with different ways of approaching this myself, and I don't know that there's an answer. But when you're trying to be ruthless and make sure you're getting to value, respecting your time and everyone else, you can sometimes lose the kind of experimental, exploratory mindset. So, you know, typical thing, you get some DM from somebody, hey, I really like what you're doing. Maybe we can talk about some ways we could work together. Now, I hate that kind of DM. And I usually respond, give me something concrete or I'm not going to just get on a call with you for like, what are you hoping to accomplish? Like, let me make sure. And then if it doesn't seem like it fits, I'll say, honestly, that just doesn't seem like it fits in our current priorities. So maybe check in later. And I think that's good. And that's a survival mechanism. But there's an element where sometimes expanding your sort of luck surface area kind of having some of those unlikely conversations, experimenting and exploring can lead to some things. And I know that the people who tend to already be too nice, they overly fear that. Oh, but if I'm too ruthless, then I'll miss all these unquantifiable opportunities. Like, that's not usually their problem. But some of us who are too ruthless can sometimes err in the other direction, where you kind of don't really have time for just bumping into people and having unexpected things emerge. I'm curious, from either of you, how do you kind of make sure that you are allowing for that?
So that's a really good question. I do take those calls, but under conditions. And the more you guys get to know me, the more you will know there are conditions with everything. With me. Everything has, I am not in, an unconditional person. I mean, I love my kids unconditionally. But I'm going to take your call. And my response to you is, here's what I need to know. It's just like those calls that come in from folks who are like, we want to partner with you. And I'm like,
why?
Are you trying to sell me something? Or do you really want to partner? Do we really have folks in common? And so I'm just honest. Like, here's where I am right now. Here's what I'm looking for. Do you fit this? If not, what do you have? Right. You got to convince me to get on the phone. If the response is good enough, I'll get on the call. I do sometimes just kind of take some, like, I try to sort of flex the nice muscle, even though I don't have it. I'll get on a call that I know is going to go nowhere just to sort of maybe help someone. But generally, it's going to come with conditions. I need you to answer a couple questions first. If you could do that, then sure, I'll give you my time.
Yeah. You got to be protective of your time, but, you know, open for new opportunities. You never know what person you're talking to when you're playing the game that might be able to give you some answer you didn't know. But at the same time, conditions, right? You know, have some rules, respect contract. So many of those calls I've learned over the years, because I've taken hundreds and hundreds of calls with people that are just trying to learn. Like, and I've always done that, whether it was with Isaac and Praxis, what you were doing, Isaac, just trying to help folks that were going out through the program. But I've always gotten, as I've gotten more and more busy, you mature and mature and mature, you add family, where I've started now ending 30-minute calls at 5, 7, 10 minutes. You know, that too. Like, you know, hey, you do that once or twice a day, you just got back an hour. That hour, I can make a lot of money in an hour, you know, like if I really want to. You got to start to prioritize and protect your time. And whenever you realize that your time has a dollar cost associated with it, you know, when you go like, hey, what's my hourly rate? Well, was this worth $500 an hour? If I think I'm worth $500 an hour in my theoretical universe, that's $1 million a year, folks, right? $500 an hour. Well, then was that hour worth $500 to you? You better think critically. Was it? You know, probably not. Probably not.
Yeah.
And if you're taking it from Revenue Rashida over here, I just had to throw that out there because you were just like on it.
Revenue Rashida Cash Calhoun.
I love it.
you absolutely rocked it. I can't wait to just highlight more and get more of your thoughts out in the market, because I think you just are a rallying cry for the right reasons, and so much fun to listen to and learn from. And I think you're gonna have a big impact on the industry. I'm calling it now. We definitely want to do a lot more with you and have a lot more fun conversations. Thanks so much for coming to the Nearbound Summit doing Sales Day. Folks, if you haven't caught onto or checked out Nearbound Summit yet, you have to. Some of the best content you've seen ever in the history of partnerships, including Rashida's session. Rashida, thank you so much for coming on the Nearbound podcast.
Absolute pleasure. I loved it.
All right.
I feel like I want just like a 30-second clip of Rashida just drop it, like getting hyped to start every morning with, like, hey, people, wake up. You know, this is about getting shit. That's about revenue. I feel like that would just.
She's the David Goggins of partnerships, folks. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. All right, Nearbound. We'll see you around. Until next time on the Nearbound podcast and at nearbound.com.